Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe, host in Bonn, Germany. In today's program, a cloud of uncertainty hangs over Zanzibar following the cancellation of election results.
There is a crisis because according to the constitution, the time of the president ends 5 years from the date he was sworn in, which is, the 2nd of November.
Ghana embarks on a nationwide drive to rid the country of unqualified teachers.
When you go to the college, you are taught how to teach. So if you haven't had that formal training, usually it's very difficult to impart knowledge on children.
And we'll be hearing the first episode of our new Learning by Ear series, Crime Fighters. Don't miss it.
Top story.
We begin in Zanzibar, where pressure is mounting against Jecha Salim Jecha, the head of Tanzania's Electoral Commission, for nullifying the October elections on the island. Mediation efforts involving international actors are currently underway. They are aimed at finding an amicable solution and avoid an outbreak of violence. The EU has particularly called on both parties to work out an agreement as soon as possible. DW's Muhammad Helef reports from Zanzibar.
Whereas tension is building up in Zanzibar, opposition candidate Seif Sharif Hamad is happy with the ongoing efforts to resolve the political crisis. In a press conference held at his party's headquarters, Sharif Hamad said he is optimistic about the outcome of the mediation. Efforts to resolve this crisis so as to reach to a decision that respects voters' voice have increased and seem to be leading to the right direction. Some organizations involved in this process are the UN, development partners, including those who sent their observers, some retired leaders, religious leaders, and the Tanzanian Political Party Register, Judge Francis Mutungi. The 72-year-old politician has unsuccessfully run for presidency since 1995. Nevertheless, he said his party is encouraged by the goodwill gesture shown by the parties involved in the process. He continues to urge his supporters to remain calm and continue trusting their leaders at these crucial moments. We are very much motivated and believe that sooner or later, this crisis will be peacefully resolved and Zanzibar will see the fruits of our democracy. We ask our people to remain calm and preserve our peace and to leave the matter to their leaders who are working with the people, organizations and institutions we mentioned, believing that in just a few days they will see the fruits of their passion. Nigerian former President Goodluck Jonathan is leading a group of African leaders to resolve the matter. There is also a special task force comprised of Zanzibari elders under the coordination of the European Union. However, there seems to be some restraints at the Chama cha Mapinduzi ruling party is concerned. A group of diehard politicians are said to stand on the way as to stop any achievement. Mohamed Aboud, a minister of coordination in the second vice president office, has been on Zanzibar Broadcasting Corporation, ZBC, where he ordered security forces to take punitive measures against anyone who disrupts peace, including those who announced victory for the presidential elections. The law prohibits any person or institution to announce election results that are not mentioned by electoral commission, and it is a crime to do so. The government won't tolerate anyone who disobeys the laws, and he will be dealt accordingly. By this statement, the government urges security forces to take actions against those who have broken the law. Mr. Aboud also said the incumbent, Ali Mohamed Shein, will continue his tenure until the new president is sworn in after the elections. For both the CCM and the government, another election will be held in 90 days.
Mohamed Helef reporting from Zanzibar. For more analysis on current developments there, Africa Link's Jane Ayeko spoke to Abdul Sharif from the Dar es Salaam University.
The question is, why has it come up this time, 3 days after the vote has ended, that all the results are cancelled? Previously, before that happens, there would have been a lot of tension building up. This time it did not occur. And I think basically it seems to me that the results were so clear-cut and it was difficult to get away from those figures. So So it seems as if the results were not liked by one party, and the only way they could get around them was to get them cancelled.
How have the people of Zanzibar reacted to these results so far? I mean, the position that has been taken by the ruling party and the developments as they unfold?
Well, I mean, obviously, the reaction of the people will go along party lines, because the country is divided half and half. And I could observe only in Zanzibar town, because I could not really move around. It was expectation of something good, but also a lot of fear whether they will be allowed to win. What will happen this time? Because every time there is a new excuse and a new way that they feel they've been cheated. This time it seems to have been straightforward. And so people were saying, oh, I think this time we will win.
Now, the opposition candidate, Saif Sharif Hamad, says as from November, there will be no government.
Yes.
He threatened to call for protests if the situation is not resolved. Do we foresee this happening?
Yeah, I assume so. Because in fact, if he does not do anything, then he will lose credibility with his supporters. And this time he had promised that he will not hold them back. And there is a crisis, because according to my understanding of the Constitution, is that the time of the president ends 5 years from the date he was sworn in, which is, I think, the 2nd of November.
We've just learned that the CCM has said the current president is going to stay in power for the next 3 months until the next election is conducted. And as I've just heard from you, this is not within the law. So how is this going to be possible? Or what does this tell us about the near future of Zanzibar?
Well, I think it will be chaotic, apart from what the CCM is saying. All the lawyers that I've had here, both in Zanzibar and on the mainland here, all of them seem to be saying that there is no provision of the current president remaining in power after the 5 years are over.
Abdul Sharif, a professor of history at the University of Dar es Salaam.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
In Ghana, the palm oil sector is facing a major crisis. Producers are said to be adding in some chemicals in the oil to brighten its red-like nature, but the result may cause cancer. The EU is now subjecting palm oil products from Ghana to strict scrutiny before entering its market, whereas the UK has warned its citizens about the consumption. Anza Kalechi reports on what the government is doing to rescue the industry.
This is the Agogloshe market in Ghana. It's popular for the trading that takes place here. Families are able to access all kinds of food items needed to prepare their meals. Among the products sold here is palm oil. It's the fifth largest non-traditional cash crop of Ghana's foreign exchange. About 260 metric tons of the product is exported annually. The oil is used locally as well, but it's the quality of the oil that is now under scrutiny. The oil, according to Ghana's Food and Drugs Authority, is being adulterated with sudi dye, a poisonous chemical that causes cancer.
The mandate of the Food and Drugs Authority is to ensure food safety.
That's Maria Loveless Johnson, the head of food safety at the Food and Drugs Authority. She has led a team of officials to various markets in the city to test the quality of palm oil, and the verdict wasn't good.
We realized that 98% rate of the adulteration was too high, so we had to inform consumers about it. And another reason why we had to inform consumers about it is that it's not like the pre-packaged foods. These ones are made from artisanal, and so it makes it difficult to even trace them to their sources.
Maria and her colleagues are hoping to rid the system of the substandard product. Traders who refuse to comply with the directive not to sell the product are being arrested and prosecuted. The traders are worried as their businesses are now being negatively affected. Maxwell Komini is organizing secretary for the Oil Palm Development Association of Ghana.
Very, very, very worried. And to be honest with you, it's something that we wish we could have identified it earlier, so that we wouldn't have gone so far to where we are now. Our oils we eat, especially the red oil we eat, is contaminated with the Sudan dye. it's just a good start for us to be able to eradicate all this oil from the system.
The export of the product has been suspended due to quality concerns, as the government of the UK has, for instance, warned its citizens against consuming palm oil coming from Ghana. With palm oil becoming a major foreign earner for Ghana, government is concerned about the trend and has now launched a mission to get rid of these substandard products.
Isaac Kalechi reporting. Still in Ghana, it has come to the notice of the Minister of Education that many teachers are using fake certificates to obtain employment. Accordingly, it has begun a nationwide validation exercise to clean the ministry of unqualified teachers. A number of them have been working with forged documents for more than 20 years. The exercise has since revealed that some workers are using their friends' or relatives' certificates to work. These unqualified teachers are blamed for the country's poor record in education. Maxwell Sook brings us that report.
Who can we take credit of?
Little Amma has just closed from school and she starts to read her storybook. As the grade 5 pupil fumbles to read it out loudly, I notice she basically doesn't understand what she is reading. That is the state of many early grade children. Her teacher, Doreen Gulbe, says she always have trouble teaching them.
Most of them can't comprehend when you speak throughout a lesson using the English language. So there are times you have to chip in with the local language.
Ghana's early grade pupils are underperforming according to a recent study conducted. Up to 90% of these children hardly read and understand. This is part of the reason why a national audit exercise to validate certificates of the staff of the Ghana Education Service has commenced. Doreen says a good teacher must have pedagogy.
When you go to the college, you are taught how to teach. So if you haven't had that formal training, usually it's very difficult to impart knowledge on children.
Ghanaians have partly blamed the country's poor educational record to such fake teachers.
Those that do that are the bad ones who are killing our educational system.
You are going to teach people, prepare them for their future. And if you yourself, you are not correct, how can you prepare people for their future?
The audit authority in Tamale is reserved to grant media interviews until the exercise is concluded. But independent sources say some workers have been caught using their friends' and dead relatives' certificates to work for almost 20 years now. Abdul Ganiu has been teaching for the past decade, and he says the exercise is the best way to end fraud in the system.
Only recently, one I heard about where somebody produced fake certificates for people to gain admission. And basically what they would often do, once the certificate belongs to someone else, they will now go and carry out an affidavit to change that person's name to their own name. So these are practices that are ongoing in our institutions, and we all have to be on the lookout.
Earlier this year, an institution responsible for paying public sector workers in Ghana issued a news release following controversies over the bloating of government payroll with ghost names in the education sector. Ghana's Fair Wages and Salary Commission has assured that all persons found culpable will be prosecuted.
Maxwell Sook reporting in Tamale. It's now time to sit back and enjoy our new Learning by Ear radio drama series, Crime Fighters.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, a very warm welcome to our brand new series, Crime Fighters, The Radical Journey. Written by Pinado Abduwaba, with a special contribution from Nigerian writer Helon Habila. Our story takes place in the African country of Kululaland, and we start at the crowded Domingo shopping mall, where many young people meet to have lunch and socialize. As our story begins, terror has just struck. A bomb has just gone off in a cosmetic shop. The police have secured the scene while they gather evidence, and family members are waiting outside for news of their loved ones. The commissioner of police himself is there,
along with two young officers, Inspector Brenda and Cadet Inspector Jude. Let's join them for our first episode, The Suicide Bomber.
Sergeant, Sergeant, make sure nobody comes in, only uniformed personnel, and keep the wounded on this side of the fence.
Sir, we've confirmed that it was a suicide bombing. The cosmetics shop was crowded. Five people died along with the bomber. We're still counting the wounded.
The body parts we've collected, including the bomber's head, have been taken to the morgue for identification.
Excellent. Inspectors Brenda and Jude, I want you two to work with me closely on this case. This is the third bombing in 4 weeks. We have to get to the bottom of this. I saw the bomb squad on their way out. Do they have anything concrete yet?
So far, what we know is that it was an IED, an improvised explosive device. The bomber was wearing an explosive belt. From the samples we've collected, it contained gunpowder, dynamite, and ammonium nitrate, most likely fertilizer.
So it was locally made. What about the bomb belt? Does it match the others?
That's yet to be confirmed. We'll go to the morgue first, then we'll ask the bomb squad whether they have a conclusive result.
Very well. Off you go.
Sir, what we do know is that the suicide bomber was a woman, which is unusual, because as you know, it's generally men who carry out this sort of attack.
A woman? How strange. But it isn't the first time, and recent events seem to suggest that this could become a trend.
Excuse me, is anyone here?
Yes, right here, I'm coming. Good afternoon.
Hello, I'm Inspector Brenda from the Takoka Regional Police Headquarters. And this is my colleague, Cadet Inspector Jude.
Hello.
We're here to see the remains of the suicide bomber.
Of course. Try it this way, madam. Only the head is identifiable, I'm afraid. The rest of the body is in pieces. Here, if you're ready, I lift the cloth.
Oh, no.
Jude, are you okay?
I'll be fine.
I'm sorry. Give us a minute, please.
Don't worry. I see that in a lot of new officers.
Jude?
Brenda, I...
Come on. Be brave. You'll see a lot more of that in this job. But I do understand. It is your first time seeing a corpse. Or rather, half a corpse.
You don't understand, Brenda. I know her.
What do you mean you know her?
Her name is... was Zora. She was my girlfriend at university. But we broke up 3 months ago.
This is serious, Jude. I'm sorry. But it means we'll have to take you off the case. I'll speak to the commissioner right away.
No. No, Brenda. Please don't do that. Please. This case is an opportunity for me to get ahead in the force, don't you see?
I don't know, Jude. Let me think about it. Of course, the media are already onto it. It's all over the news. Jude, please, quickly, turn up the volume. Let's listen. We don't want them complicating issues in an ongoing investigation.
Okay, Brenda, where is the remote? Ah, here it is.
In a development believed to be unprecedented in Kululaland, the body of the suicide bomber at the Domingo Shopping Mall has been identified as 20-year-old Zora Kasim, daughter of the current Commissioner of Finance, Honorable Kasim. She had just graduated from Takoka University with a Bachelor of Science degree in Economics. The police say they have yet to establish any link between her and a terrorist group or any motive to suggest why she may have carried out the attack.
Okay, that's enough.
Inspector Brenda, Cadet Inspector Jude.
Sir,
how did it go at the morgue?
Very well, Mr. Commissioner.
I've just finished speaking with Honorable Kasim, the suicide bomber's father. He seems to have had no clue. He tells me he was very close to his daughter. Zora was the youngest child and the only girl. The others are all boys and much older. Honorable Kasim says he can't think of anything about her behavior that he even hinted she might do something like this.
Maybe it's too early for him to be sure. We'll have to go and question him again when he's taken it all in.
You're right. Honorable Kasim went home as soon as I broke the news. His wife is completely distraught. Jude, what's the matter with you? You are unusually quiet today.
Nothing, sir. I have a bad headache, that's all.
Make sure you take something for it.
Yes, sir.
Now, what kind of friends did the deceased have? You said you had managed to speak to someone?
Yes, briefly. Her closest friend is a girl called Patricia. She said she hadn't seen Zora for a while. She's only just got back from a stay in our home village. We'll be interviewing her more thoroughly soon.
What about boyfriends, family members, lecturers, anyone we should be talking to?
We've spoken to three of Zora's former lecturers. They were all very shocked. They said she more or less kept to herself. She was one of the brightest students and got a first-class degree. We're hoping to speak to other family members once they've all been informed.
We need a more radical approach. What are we missing? Think. Think, guys.
Could it be that somebody forced her to go inside the mall wearing the bomb belt and then detonated it with a remote?
That's a possibility. Check with the forensics to see whether the bomb could have been detonated that way. Please get in touch with Honorable Kasim and let me know as soon as you have something new.
Yes, sir.
Lord, look at them.
Oh, don't worry, boss. I'll protect you.
Oh, these journalists. Impossible.
I'll get you to the house.
Hey, you! Don't move any closer! Get back! You, get back!
Just one question. Is your daughter affiliated to Scambo, the warlord of the sword?
No comment.
How long has your daughter been a part of a terrorist organization?
No comment, I say.
No camera! No microphone! Get back!
No comment! Leave me alone! Oh, phew. What a day. Lado? Are you alone in the house?
Yes, I'm alone. Oh, Zora. My daughter has been taken from me. This is a tragedy.
Oh, calm down.
Leave me alone. I don't want to see anybody. What have I done? What sin have I committed? Why am I being forced to witness this atrocity? I'm finished. I'm finished.
Lado, you have to calm down. Don't make it any harder than it already is. People are watching us now to see how we react.
Is that all you care about? How people will react? Does it mean anything to you that your daughter has killed herself? Can't you ever see beyond politics and your own political ambition?
Lado, you have to watch your tongue.
You are unbelievable. Leave me alone. I don't want to speak to you right now. Don't come anywhere near me until I say so.
What do you mean, until you say so? We have to arrange the funeral. Lado! Lado!
And on that dramatic note, we end the first episode of our series, The Radical Journey. Join us again next time to see how the story continues. Until then, you can visit our website, dw.com/crimefighters, or join us for a discussion on Facebook. Bye for now.
And now a reminder of our stories. Zanzibar's opposition candidate Seif Sharif Hamad has said he remains optimistic about mediation efforts to resolve the election standoff. Ghana embarks on a nationwide drive to expose unqualified teachers as its Food and Drugs Authority struggle to end palm oil adulteration. With that, we come to the end of the program. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.